Next case for argument is Higby v. Century Insurance. Mr. McGuire.
It pleases the court, Phil McGuire for Mrs. Higby, the appellant in this case. I think I can summarize the issue in non-legal terms by saying, should we exalt form over substance? The question here is whether Mr. Francis, the alleged harasser, was her supervisor. The record shows very clearly, I believe, supported by a comment made by Mr. Lang.
Wouldn't we have to overrule decisions of ours, such as Parkins, in order to agree with you?
No, Your Honor, I believe you can distinguish them on the facts, because as we pointed out in our brief, the two cases that I assume you're referring to, which are Hall and Parkins, both involved, quote, supervisors who were low-level managers and weren't of the same stature as Mr. Francis is here. There is clearly evidence that he was a permanent full-time manager. He was an executive. Granted, his position in the corporate structure happened to be at a slightly lower level than Mr. Lang's. But nonetheless, under the facts that the record shows, Mr. Francis had the power to exercise a stranglehold on Mrs. Higby. He could do that because her work was done for the people whom Francis directly controlled and supervised. She got her assignments from them. He controlled those assignments. He had, and I used this analogy in the brief, at the very least, dotted line supervision over her, even if it wasn't a solid line of a straight line and box.
He made the assignments, right?
Pardon me?
He made the assignments.
I believe the record shows that he made the assignments to his people, and then they directly contacted Mrs.
Higby. Wasn't it rather similar to this fellow, Spellman, in the Parkins case, the dispatcher who assigned work to the various people?
No, I believe that, again, in Parkins, you have people who are either very low-level managers or very high-level non-managers. You don't have a person who is a full-time, I'll use the term executive, that may, I believe that's qualified, and I believe that that's supported by the record here, like Mr. Francis. So that's why I say you do not have to overrule Hall or Parkins. You can distinguish them and decide the case in reverse on that basis. You could, as an alternative, adapt the theory that Judge Rovner...
Yeah, but that would be overruling the decision, so...
Again, I believe the decisions can be harmonized, distinguished, and do not need to be reversed. So there's no fear on that. Counsel...
But this fellow didn't have any ability to hire, fire, demote, promote, and whatever, did he?
Not directly, but he could arrange her workload in such a way that people would look at her and say, you've only got eight cases, or you're not handling enough. You are a drag on our profits. And the reason is because Ted Francis says, use the outside supervisor, don't give them to Rosemary do something. He had effective control over the people who had direct control.
There wasn't any objection to that supervisor instruction, was there?
I wish I could say there was, Your Honor, but unfortunately, I can't say that. I believe, however, that we covered that in our post-trial motion, and that the at least instinctively or implicitly, we should be considered as having properly objected. I see my red light is on.
Okay, thank you, Mr.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Mr. Jepson.
May it please the Court. My name is Edward Jepson. I represent Century Insurance Company. In this case, on the issue of waiver, it is our strong position that indeed they did waive. There was a jury instruction that was agreed to by the parties and that the district court gave, which was in accord with the Seventh Circuit pattern jury instructions, and there was no objection made in a pretrial conference, no objection made in open court, no objection made at the time that the instruction was given, and that instruction is consistent with the law of the Seventh Circuit. In addition, as to the other issue raised, which is also must be viewed by this court on an abuse of discretion standard, as to the post-trial motion, there was nothing in that post-trial motion that argued that the instruction was wrong, that the law of this circuit should be changed as to the definition of a supervisor. All that post-trial motion argued was that the finding that the jury made after hearing all the evidence was that Mr. Francis was not a supervisor. Hence, we believe that this whole issue is not properly before the court. But even if it was, again, we have a jury that heard 7 days or 6 days of testimony, and the record is replete with evidence that Ms. Higbee reported to Mr. Lang, not Mr. Francis, that Lang and Francis were in different organizational groups within the company, that Mr. Francis and Ms. Higbee had contact over the phone or in person 3, 4, maybe 5 times per year, that Mr. Lang did not show or consult Mr. Francis about performance reviews, pay increases, and that it was Mr. Lang and not Mr. Francis that directed Ms. Higbee's day-to-day activities. Yes, Ms. Higbee serviced people under Mr. Francis's control, and he might hear complaints about what she did. But if anything, the record shows that the stranglehold that was referred to about work, that Mr. Francis was trying to get Ms. Higbee more work. And indeed, it made sense. She was employed by the company. Why use outside vendors when you have an employee to do the job? It's our view that the record overwhelmingly shows that Mr. Francis was not her supervisor. Indeed, Ms. Higbee admitted that whenever she had a problem, that whenever she had a complaint, that when she needed time off, vacation, had to ask questions, it was Mr. Lang to whom she went. And as this was a jury verdict, the jury heard the evidence, Ms. Higbee, simply cannot make a showing to overturn that finding, if indeed this issue is even properly before the court.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Jepson. And thank you, Mr. McGuire. The next case...